Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I am Dan Eastman, your host, and thank you so much for tuning in today here on WVOW-TV. We appreciate having you watch us, of course. It's always a pleasure to be able to share our thoughts and our viewpoint of the world with you and all the viewers. And we're very thankful. Of course, today being Tuesday, September 12th, 2023, we are well into September and we're finishing up the third quarter. And then, of course, Q3 will be finished in 2 weeks, and then we'll be moving on to Q4 and the end of 2023, which has been a very interesting year from a financial perspective. And of course, as the Eastman Financial Report, our job here is to educate you and to at least share information. It allows you to use your critical thinking skills to develop your own opinions of what's happening in the economy. And that's the big role that I play, of course, is to be able to share my thoughts on current financial news. And from my perspective, and hopefully guiding you along in the ability to look past the headlines and start looking deeper to see what's actually going on in the economy, not only in the United States, but the world. So anyway, as you know, being a frequent viewer, we are not a commercial network. We don't sell commercial advertising, and I will not be interrupted in the middle of my program with commercials, which can sometimes be annoying. Rather, we are a sponsored network, and of course, we rely on the generosity of our viewers, people like you, and sponsors who help us make ends meet. And that allows us to continue to bring this content on WVW-TV, all of our content, to you free of charge. You notice there's no paywall, and you don't have to subscribe to a monthly fee. You can tune in to WVW-TV anytime you'd like and watch our programming, our viewpoint, our view of the world, and it doesn't cost you anything. Of course, the reasons that we do that, of course, is because we have sponsors, and the sponsor of my program, of course, is Swiss America Trading, which, as I like to say, is a fine purveyor of precious metals, and they are based, an American-based company in Arizona. And they offer tangible precious metals. So if you are looking at your portfolio and wondering how you can diversify to capture and protect your assets from risk and capture value, you may have been considering tangible precious metals. And of course, if you do that, you want to be partnered with somebody in that space who is expert in the space, a trusted vendor, people with a good reputation, a long track record. And Swiss America Trading fits that bill. They've been in this space a long time. They know what they're doing, and they're very eager to help you make the decision as to whether tangible precious metal investing is right for you. So if you are interested in that space, you can give them a call at 1-800-519-6271. Ask them for some free information and they'll be happy to send it to you. There's no pressure. There's no aggressive sales tactics. They just want you to have information on the precious metals market so that you can decide for yourself whether that sector is right for you, and you'll have some solid information to base some of your decisions. You can also go to their website, SwissAmerica.com. And if you use the promo code Eastman, which is short for Eastman Financial Report, just type in Eastman and they'll send you this free information and you'll learn quite a bit about the precious metals sector. Now, when individuals are buying precious metals, of course, there are different ways to do it. You can buy gold, paper gold, by buying futures contracts or an exchange traded fund or something that has gold, somebody somewhere sitting on a pile of gold and they're selling interest in it. Or you can own the gold yourself, and that's why we call it tangible precious metals. It's touchable, it's in your hands. And a lot of people like to, when they buy precious metals, they like to own the coin or the gold or silver and hide it away in their sock drawer, and they know that no matter what happens to the economy, they're going to have gold in exchange, or silver in exchange for dollars they've earned. So you're basically converting dollars you earn, your post-tax dollars, into a tangible product that will survive the any type of an economic blowout. And that's why precious metal investing has always been very interesting for a lot of different people who want to diversify their holdings, spread it out, and have buckets and silos for every and sundry condition that comes along. Swiss America provides three convenient ways of owning gold. Of course, the first is the bullion coins that are minted by governments around the world. As you can see on the screen, these are bullion coins. And the idea was that a government mint, whether it's the United States or the UK or Canada or South America, Austria, Australia, China, wherever, Mexico, they will mint a 1 ounce gold coin, which if the government's minting it, you will rest assured that there is exactly an ounce of gold to a certain level of purity, 0.99 something. And when you buy these bullion coins, they're recognized worldwide. So if you have a Canadian maple leaf and you go over to Austria, which does the Philharmonic, basically an ounce of gold is an ounce of gold. And because it's minted by a government and a standardized coin, there's a lot of confidence in the quality and quantity of the gold. So it makes it a very easy way and a very somewhat of a liquid way to be able to hold precious metals. And that's convenient and it's not complicated. And when you go to sell your coin or trade your coin, there's a whole lot less question as to the quality because it's minted by a government somewhere. There's another way to own gold. Of course, if you don't want to walk around with 100 ounces of gold coins in your pocket, you can buy bullion blocks that come in various different sizes. And of course, bullion is manufactured by refiners. There are a number of world-renowned, very old companies that refine gold. And of course, if you read scripture, people have been refining gold and silver since the beginning. And that's what you see on the screen right now. Let's say you wanted to buy 100 ounces of gold, which would be a rather large investment, but you'd buy a brick of gold. The big question is this really 100 ounces of gold or is this just a brick? And with dealing with a reputable company like Swiss America Trading, you can be assured that if you're buying a 10 ounce bar, 100 ounce bar or whatever, that is manufactured by a reputable firm, a reputable refining firm, and that you can be assured because you're dealing with a strong partner that you're getting what you paid for. And that's always the risk. So if you're thinking about bullion investments, Swiss America has got a great track record, a long track record in this space. And if you call them 1-800-519-6271, they'll send you free information explaining all of this. And then you can decide whether that investment is right for you or whether that vendor is right for you. And if you make that personal decision, you'll have a place to buy your 100-ounce brick of gold. There's a third way that's a little bit more complicated. You can buy numismatic coins. Of course, that's a fancy Greek word that means coin collecting. And effectively, the federal government through the IRS, the Treasury, they treat antiques slightly different than they treat gold bullion or gold bullion coins for tax purposes and holding periods and such. And as a result, the gold and silver coin collecting market is a thing. And you're not only getting the gold or silver content in the coin, which was related to the number of dollars back when these things were minted, but you're also getting intangibles along with your tangible. You get the tangible coin, which is made out of gold, or partially gold. They're not 100% pure gold. They tend to be a percentage. But you also get the intangible benefits of the coin collecting world, the scarcity of the coin and the mint mark, where this thing was minted back in the day, and certain mint marks are much more desirable than others. You also get the provenance value. If, like I said, Thomas Jefferson owned the coin before you, that's more valuable than if, some unknown person owned it. So you get these intangible benefits as well as the precious metal benefit, and that is a different world of investing. And of course, Swiss America can explain all of this to you if you ask them for their free information. Either call them at 1-800-519-6271 or use the promo code Eastman, and it'll send you information that explains this. So if you're interested in coin collecting of antique gold and silver coins as a way to diversify and invest in tangibles, that's a viable way to do it. But you will want to do your homework and understand what you're getting into, what are you paying for, what's the liquidity, how can you get in, how can you get out? And when you understand that and make your decision, again, you want to be dealing with a reputable dealer, because it's very important that when you buy a tangible product that you're getting what you pay for. And that's where Swiss American can help you out. So I'd give them a call. They're a very good company and they've been doing this a long time. Another thing they're offering, which is very important, is this special report they did on the secret war on cash. And I've been bringing this up because this is something you can get for free if you call them at 1-800-519-6271 or go to the website, use the promo code Eastman. They'll send you this report. It's a great report, and it deals with the idea that money is becoming digital. I mean, you think about how you get paid in a normal course of life. You have direct deposit into your checking account, and you pay your bills ACH. The money is digital, going in, coming back out, and you never touch the money. Okay, it's a digital concept. Right now, you have absolute control of your money. There's all sorts of banks and savings and loans and credit unions. You can open up a checking account, the money comes in, the money goes out. If you're like most of us, there's usually just about as much going out as coming in. But at the end of the day, all the spending decisions are yours and yours alone. Nobody's telling you how to spend your money. Well, the problem with this secret war on cash is they're trying to develop a wallet where each and every one of us would have a wallet at the Federal Reserve. Wouldn't that be cool? Because today, only banks can bank at the Federal Reserve. It's the bank, the central bank for bankers, okay? But can you imagine if everybody in America has a checking account at the Federal Reserve? That would be really awesome. Except there's one slight problem. When those things are centralized and it's under the government control, then they can start to decide what you spend your money on. So, like I use the example, if you're overweight like me and you go into the gas station, you want to buy a can of soda, the algorithm kicks in and says, oh, turn the money off. He has to buy diet soda or water, okay? So I don't have that choice anymore. The same thing is if I want to buy a big gas guzzler car because I like to drive a big car. Oh, no, too much carbon in your neighborhood. You have to buy a small car. We turn your money off. Or, oh, you didn't vote for the right candidate? Well, you're all your money's turned off. Now you're going to starve to death. That's the problem with a centrally controlled currency. And since the creation, all humans have had the ability to earn money and make economic decisions. Some people spend it on food. Some people spend it on luxury. Some people spend it on hobbies, entertainment. Nobody tells you what you can spend your money on. Now, there are some things that are illegal to buy, and you make that decision. Well, that's your problem. You get caught, you go to jail. But the reality is you get to make your economic decisions. With this secret war on cash, they want to be able to guide your decisions to where they want you to be. And that means that you don't have full discretion to spend your money. And that's when your individual freedom disappears. So that's why this report is important. And as I've said, other mainstream financial news outlets are picking up on this as an individual rights, a civil rights concern, that if the government can control how you spend your money, then your freedoms are gone. You are not a free person. You are an individual who is allocated resources, and that's all you get. And if you're in the right stratus, you get the mansion on Long Island. If you're not, you're going to end up on a park bench buying, I guess, diet soda like me. So anyway, this report's very important. So give Swiss America a call, 1-800-519-6271. Ask them free. They'll send it to you. They're not going to make sales calls and pressure you. They're going to send you this report. Read it. Get up to speed on this issue. Read other information. And then when this stuff comes down the pipe, you'll be ready to go. So thank you again to Swiss America. Appreciate you sponsoring this program and all of our sponsors here at WVW-TV. Because without them, it would be a lot less content, and that would be bad for you and everybody else. Okay, let's talk about the news for today. One story that caught my eye, of course, we've been talking about the banking crisis since the banks started to wobble back, I think, March and April. When I first started broadcasting, it was kind of an interesting coincidence because I had this great material. I mean, we were starting to have bank failures, and those are always exciting to report on because, of course, they're scary. People put their money in the bank, and then, you know, the bank collapses, and then the question is, can I get my money out? And we looked at the Silicon Valley Bank situation, which was, I guess, the headline bank along with First Republic, and we saw that when that bank went down, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation insured deposits up to $250,000. But we had celebrities in that bank because that was the place to be. It funded a lot of the tech startups. And it was, if you're in the tech culture in California with, you know, great food, great wine, great tech, it was a real shishi bank for famous and wealthy people to put money on deposit because you're supporting high tech. And it was just a cool lifestyle thing. Well, you know, you look at, you know, poor souls like, you know, Prince Harry, who's I guess he's a legal immigrant. I guess so. I don't know how he got in here. I don't think he snuck over the border. I think he kind of flew in on a jet. But the point is, he had a bunch of money in that bank. When the bank cratered, you know, the FDIC said, well, I can give you $250,000 back. And there's like, wait a minute, I got millions in there. Well, Federal Treasury came to the rescue and everybody got their money back. So Harry didn't lose out. Other famous people too. But at the end of the day, that was the process with banks. And the big problem was the disintermediation in that bank and the fact that the Federal Reserve started jacking up the interest rates, which has an effect. Banks have a reservoir of reserves. you got depositors like Harry putting their money in, and then you lend it out to these SiliconValley.coms, which are very risky, and there's this buffer in the middle, and those are bank reserves. And of course, they're valued because most of them are debt instruments. Virtually all of them got cash and a little cash in the vault in the basement, but these are debt instruments. Debt is valued as an inverse function of the interest rate. So as interest rates go up, the existing debt value on the books goes down algebraically to compensate. And when that shrinkage happened, they dropped below the ratios and the banks looked, well, that one became insolvent, or at least technically insolvent. And as a result of that, you know, the bank collapsed, everybody steps in, you know, we know the story. There were three banks that went down and then a fourth one a little later as a result of the Fed's aggressive raising of interest rates. Well, you know, fast forward to what, September 12th, a couple of months later, what banks do is they try to get deposits coming in. And of course, with interest rates up, they have to, you know, dangle that little ornament, you know, oh, we get 5% on a 9-month CD. And of course, it attracts money. And you want to get, as a banker, you want deposits coming in. The bigger your deposit base, the more loans you can make, the more spread you can make. And that's the profitability of the bank, at least with respect to the pure banking function. They got all sorts of other profit centers and banks. But that's how the mechanics of banks work. And what's happened, and what has happened traditionally, is there are things that are called brokered deposits. And this is big chunks of money that brokers will find somebody with a big chunk of money, and they will place it in banks around the country, around the world, to capture highest yield. So there's always some bank somewhere who's watching their reserves getting a little thin. They said, man, we need some more deposits so we can, you know, get our ship right. You know, we're listing starboard here. Okay, so what they do is you offer free toasters or whatever you can do to convince the people in the community, or send a letter to Harry. Hey, Harry, park your money in our bank. And then what happens is you grow your deposit base and the bank gets stronger. It gets outside of the zone. So the FDIC and the Fed, they're not watching. They, whoa, here we go again. So these broker deposits have become a thing. And banks will offer the interest rate equivalent of a free toaster, a little higher interest rate, and it attracts this money. But as this money moves around, and it's trillions, I mean, there's a lot of money. As the money's moving around the world from bank to bank to bank to bank, you're effectively trading on it's a short-term position. You take 9-month, 1-year CD, whatever it is, but the money is highly volatile. If you're not offering the highest rate available at the time that money's looking for a parking space, you get passed up. They grab the highest. That's all they do. Grab the highest, grab the highest, grab the highest. And it's really money that moves rather quickly. So the problem is it's volatile. It moves money in, money out. And of course, it's very expensive. You want this volatile money in, you've got to offer the highest rate. So it's costly money. It affects your income statement, your expense. The cost of money is an expense, and it's high. So as banks are playing in the broker deposit game, I mean, you can get a lot of money into your bank real fast and get your ratios up and everybody's happy, but it's the cost of the highest interest. And as this money is volatile, it puts banks into this unfortunate, risky position of big deposits can leave as soon as the CD expires. And suddenly you're scrambling to fill that hole in your reserves. And the only way to fill it is to offer ever higher interest rates to attract the next wandering pile of money. So it puts banks at risk. It's a destabilizing factor. These aren't local businesses that are in town for 30 years and they put their money in the local bank and everybody's happy. You know, they all play golf at 3 p.m. That's not what this is. This is the Wild West of Wall Street, where big chunks of money are looking for the shortest possible term at the highest interest rate and park it, park it, park it, and that's their business model. And the banks, of course, are, you know, it's sort of take it or leave it. But if they leave it, then you've got a hole in your reserves and your bank starts to look pretty wobbly. And next thing you know, the FDIC is showing up on Friday. So it's a real interesting problem that we're seeing, that since the bank wobbles of March and April, the system is still trying to find its equilibrium. And that's a real difficult situation because you know, there's only so many dollars, and interest rates at the rate they are, there's for every interest rate, there's a for every price, there's a quantity. If you think of the classic supply and demand curves, for every quantity, there's a price. You know, then depends on the supply and demand, and that moves around, but there's a set point somewhere. And I think that's why the regulators are, that's why we see the story in the media today, is that the regulators are beginning to think, wow, with this full, you know, velocity, and it's not just U.S. banks, because money is international. I mean, it's no small thing to be able to take a dollar and park it in a bank anywhere else, because it's the world currency, trade currency, and park your deposits somewhere else, because it's all digital and global today. You don't have to jump on a plane and fly off somewhere. I mean, you just basically push a button and money's in France or wherever, Switzerland, wherever it goes. So it creates an instability in the banking system that is not helpful at a time when interest rates are high, the economy itself is sluggish, and the demand for solid business loans is short. Because when you think about commercial lending with banks, their whole business model is to run around town and find businesses that need to borrow money. You do a credit analysis and you find the best of the best businesses who need money, and then you lend it to them. And of course, at a higher interest rate than you're paying your depositors. Well, if you do a five-year loan, let's say you do a five-year commercial real estate loan, and you've got these volatile brokered deposits, man, if that money moves in 90 days or 6 months or a year or 3 years CD, and you're out 5 years, you could very easily have a gap as that money moves. So it's really becoming one of these stabilization issues that's not uncommon in the banking industry, but really raises its ugly head when the economy starts to wobble. And that's why for all these headlines of, you know, inflation is being tamed and there's more jobs than ever and everything's rosy, when you read between the headlines, and this is that critical thinking component, when you read between the headlines, you start seeing this, you start thinking to yourself, you know, why is this volatile, these hot deposits or these broker deposits, why is this a story? What's the issue? What are the regulators looking at? Well, they're looking at this instability because the market itself has not cleared. We're in a turbulent period in our economy. And if you think back to the Adam Smith, in the long run, everything goes to equilibrium. Keynes comes along and says, in the long run, we're all dead. We got to fiddle with the economy. We're not in an equilibrium situation. And it's questionable whether we ever get to the equilibrium. But at the end of the day, what we're seeing is still seeing turbulence in the system. So the next headline, of course, and check my time here, the UAW, United Auto Workers, a very old and famous and, you know, well-respected trade union that is the nemesis, of course, of Ford and Chrysler and GM and all the other companies, they're once again at odds. And for a long time, we didn't hear about labor issues because we didn't have inflation in the economy. You know, back in the 70s, this was a thing. Then, you know, after inflation was tamed in the 1980s during the Reagan administration, from the 80s on, right up until about, you know, 3 years ago, inflation wasn't a thing. And now it's a thing. And this is where the unions, that's their proper role. They step in and say, hey, wait a minute, inflation's going through the roof. 9% inflation is still rolling at 3.5 or 4, depending which government numbers they haven't revised. Our workers need a raise. And of course, General Motors and Ford, they're looking at, you know, the volume of cars being sold down, because not only are there still supply chain issues with respect to getting parts, because all the cars are digital nowadays, but there's also cost of labor and cost of materials, a slow demand for the product. So if you look at Ford and GM, their income statements, their earnings are squeezed. You know, revenue minus expenses is earnings, and those numbers aren't as robust as anybody'd like to see. And what's telling is the story implied that the UAW, they're planning to strike General Motors and Ford, but they seem to be backing away from the table. And when what that tells you is, as labor negotiates with management, there's a lot of, you know, they sit in a big conference room across from each other and they snarl and growl, then they bring in lunch, they all laugh and talk about their grandkids, and then they go back to snarling and growling. But what's happening is when you see labor starting to look at the income statement and balance sheet of the companies they're going to strike, you can strike them out of business. And that if you look at the yellow truck situation, that didn't work out real well for yellow truck, and it certainly didn't work out well for the union workers that were working there. So what you're seeing in this headline is that there's a subtle recognition that pushing too hard from the labor side may kill the golden goose, and we don't want to see that. So what this is telling me, using my critical thinking skills, is that it's recognized that the economy isn't quite as robust as everybody had hoped. Plus, we know that Ford has dumped billions of dollars into electric vehicle development, and General Motors has as well. And that segment of the market is less than 5% of cars sold. And if you're spending billions of dollars developing cars that nobody wants, that's not a good end game. You know, and Ford did that a while back. Remember, they bought, I can't remember which year it was, but they bought the struggling British automaker Jaguar. Of course, anybody who knows anything about sports cars loves the Jaguar, the XKE. Boy, there's nothing finer on the road than a Jaguar. And Ford buys it, and this is back in the day, they pumped $2 billion into it. It was an absolute loser, and they ended up selling it to Tata Motors of India, of East India, because they lost their shirt on that deal. Well, the ghost of the Jaguar deal is lingering in electric car manufacturing. And of course, as they're pushing to get everybody to buy electric cars, there's nowhere to charge. The unions are realizing that this could push the whole thing over the edge. So we're starting to see some common sense happening. And that's why that story is relevant, because what it tells you is the US economy is not as healthy as could be. So when you're a commercial bank taking hot deposits and lending money to GM and Ford, there's risk. There's increased systemic risk in the market. And that's why that's an important thing. Another story I noticed is that you're hearing more and more prominent financial talking heads. I guess I'm going to wake up to be a talking head one day. Who thought that? But at the end of the day, there are prominent people in this space who are well respected, and they are starting to think in terms of 25 to 40% of commercial real estate loans will default. That's a huge number. I don't know if they're right or not, but we've been talking about commercial real estate loans and how the market has changed and people aren't commuting in, going up into the tower and commuting back home anymore. Everybody's working in a diverse, spread out work from home environment. And at the end of the day, this is another indication that these banks who are relying on these hot deposits or these brokered deposits, if that money, if you've got a bunch of commercial real estate loans that are wobbly or in default, and then your hot money leaves, you're gone. And as a bank, your ratios will be blown out of the water. Federal Reserve will be stepping in, and the old Friday at five, they close the doors, and Monday morning there's a new sign out front. That is another indicator that the banking system, there's risk. There's strong headwinds right now, and in the financial system, it's trying to find a way to balance that out. And of course, that's a really good reason for you as an individual to think about, if the whole financial system comes crashing down for a while, how do I protect my wealth? And that might be a really good reason to think about, diversifying your holdings into tangibles of one sort or another, or gold or silver or art or whatever. I mean, you want to be thinking about, how do you protect yourself from the blowback on all of this stuff? And I think it's a telling market. I also saw a story in my last minute here that the subprime auto lots are struggling as well. There's lack of inventory, and prices are way up on used cars. And effectively, what they do is, if you can't get a car loan, they will sell you a car, an old car, and they'll take the paper and they'll sit on the paper at a very high interest rate. You're going to be paying interest, and then if you can somehow manage to pay the loan off, the car is yours to keep. Well, that's the subprime to get people wheels under people, and there's a valuable reason for that industry to exist. Certainly not the best way to buy a car, but it certainly may be the only way you can buy a car, and you're thankful for the wheels under your seat, and it works. But when you see that type of sector struggling as well, which is outside of the banking industry because they're private notes, it's another indicator. Well, I'm out of time for today. Happy to talk. We're going to have a lot of news coming up the rest of the week, financial reporting coming in. Thanks so much for tuning in to WVW TV and the Eastman Financial Report. Really happy that you're watching, and have a great day. Bye.